Thank you.
Did a good job, didn't he? Adrian's not one for speaking out in front of people. Sometimes you have to make people do it. It's good. Awesome. So, end of a series. Church and culture. We finish it today. It's been a good series, I think. I feel it's been good. Been some good messages. Especially like Taff's last week. I thought it was awesome. I wasn't here, but I've listened to it. It was good. It's good. So we end today with the title is, and I'll explain what the word means after, how do we live in a pluralistic culture? A pluralistic, it's a long word, pluralistic society. Okay? So, the basic word is, how do we live in this culture? How do we live in this world? How are we supposed to live as Christians in the place where we are, where we live? Okay? So what's a pluralistic culture? So, it starts off good, explaining what a pluralistic culture is, right? Pluralistic culture, it's one where anything can be believed. Okay? So that's good, in that sense, it's you can believe. It's diverse. Another good thing about a pluralistic culture. People tolerate each other. Anyone like to be tolerated? I like to be tolerated. Well, I like to be more than tolerated, I like to be liked. Who likes to be liked? No? Okay, a few of us like to not like ourselves, that's alright. Okay. We're supposed to, in a pluralistic culture, we tolerate each other and our beliefs, or their beliefs. Sounds good, okay? This is where it goes a bit funny. There's no right or wrong. Takes a bit of a dive there, doesn't it? Pluralistic culture, doing well, there's no right or wrong. Crash and burn, okay? Do as you please. Didn't we go through that in the Bible not long ago, where we kept looking to the end of Judges, and it says there were no laws; everyone done as they pleased. It's a bad place to be in. Do as you please, obviously within the laws that have been set. But if the laws don't work, then change them. Change all the laws to suit everybody else's needs. The thing is, and this is a problem. Good morning. The problem is that has crept into the church. That's crept into the church as a whole. Believe what you want to believe. Do what you want to do. And if you're not happy with what's going on, then you change them. Or you go and tell people they must change what they do, what they speak, what they believe, and that's not right. So, what we're looking at today is this. The big idea of this morning is this. When God's commands influence the way we live, the whole of our lives, not part of our lives, the whole of our lives, will often see his name be praised through our actions. So I'll say that again, just so we understand where we are this morning. When God's commands influence the way we live the whole of our lives, we'll often see his name be praised through our actions. This isn't talking about God's commands influencing one area of our lives, like I'm going to be tolerant of people. I'm not going to get anything else right of what God wants me to do, but I'm going to be tolerant. Because we should be tolerant of people. We call it grace. We call that grace. Showing grace to someone. Being tolerant. That's part of grace. The message of grace. Okay? God was tolerant with us. When he looked at us, see what we was like, and yet still sent his son to die on the cross for us. It was tolerance. God's got higher tolerance levels than I have. Trust me. Grace is shown to us. And that grace should flow out of us to others. And do you know what? Actually, the grace that is shown to us, that should flow out from us to others, is a given. It's a thing that should just happen. Because of the love that God poured out for us by sending his son on the cross. That if we have any part in Christ, then that should flow from us. Should it not? Should it flow from us? You can come back to me this morning, you can say yeah. Yeah. You can even do like, what do you call it? What are them things called? The emojis. You can be a meh if you want. Meh. But I don't like meh. I'd rather, yeah, that's good. Or even in your head going, I don't agree with that. Come and talk to me afterwards and we'll sort it out. That's fine. That's really all right as well. But grace that pours out for us should be poured out from us to others. That would be a good start, wouldn't it? That should be the place where it starts with us. The grace that has been poured out for us should pour out from us to others. Are there people in this room that you haven't spoken to for a while? Maybe you've not even looked at them. See, I had a problem at one point. If you upset me, right, and because I was a good Christian young man, well, not young man, but I was a Christian man, and you upset me, actually, so that I didn't be mean to you, right? So there was no chance, if you was really just horrible to me all the time, so that there weren't that chance of me reacting to you, right? Or actually just coming over and being horrible myself, because you just, I couldn't, well, I would not look at you. I would keep away from you. Because in some twisted way in my mind, I thought that was the right thing to do. Because I should keep peace. But the problem is, that's not the right thing to do. Actually, it's not the right thing to do. It caused me problems when I did it. In fact, no, couldn't look at anyone. The problem is, it causes you to be stuck. Stuck where you are. Stuck in the position you are. Stuck in your growth. Stuck in the way that you relate with God. Stuck in the way that you relate with others. You see, when someone asks you about that person who aggravates you, or you can't look at, or you won't speak to, actually, you have a twisted view of that person. And that's wrong. There's some things I'm going to say this morning where I'm going to say, that's wrong. This is not the right way to live. This is the right way to live. Okay? Trust me, I've been there doing it. Sometimes I have to deal with it still. Someone might have upset you. And you could be stuck. You ask the question, why aren't I growing? Why do I not feel close to God? Well, it's because you're pushing God away. It's because there's things in your life that you're not allowing to happen. And so actually what you do when you do that, you put a barrier up to God. And so you actually keep God out of the situation. You see, if you're going to keep God out of one thing in your life, why do you expect him to be in every other part of it? Oh, I go to church. I go to church and I put my hands up and I listen and I even take notes. And then afterwards, I go home and I beat one of my family. Or I go and get drunk. Or whatever you can think of. It's not right, is it? Is that the way we should live? No. This stuff isn't keeping you away from God. God's always got his hands out to us, to each and every one of us. He'll have his hand out to us until our last dying breath. God will always have his hand saying, come to me, son, come to me, daughter. But it's us who pushes God away. In our unforgiveness, we push God away. What we do is, it's not that God has separated himself from us. I want us to hear that. What it is that we've separated ourselves from God. That's what we do. We separate ourselves from God. Listen, we'll get on to the main thing. This is, when I was preparing this, it's just something that God spoke to me about. Forgiveness. Forgiveness isn't taking the higher ground. I'm going to be the bigger person. I'll take the higher ground in this moment of time. I won't respond. I won't do anything. I'll keep away. I won't look at them. I won't talk to them. The Bible says I should forgive. So I'm going to forgive them. I'm going to forgive them from afar. I'd never speak to them again. Never go near them again. But I've forgiven them. No, you haven't. You've decided not to do something about the situation. There's no forgiveness there. That's not forgiveness. Okay? Forgiveness is loving the other person. Forgiveness is loving the other person. Even though they may have hurt you. And this is a really funny thing. And I've said this before. I might have upset someone. I quite often do. But I might have upset someone. Now, I might have no idea that I've upset them. I might have said something from here. I might have said something in a conversation. Or I might have done a gesture. I might not have smiled at them. Okay? Just so I don't upset you. Welcome to church this morning. Alright? But I might have no idea that I've upset them. If someone then comes over to me and goes, oh, Stuart, I forgive you. I'm like, what? What did I do? What have I done wrong? That they've had to forgive me for? Wow, it must be bad. You can set the other person a whole range of thoughts and feelings. They might have an idea they've hurt you. But even so, if I hurt you and I've got a bit of a grump with you for something, and then you come over to me and go, oh, Stuart, I forgive you, you might actually just set me off on a whole other level of like, what do you mean, forgive me, you high-handed? Because it does happen. I know you're sitting there going, not me. I'm a Christian. But it happens. Okay? Because I've seen people's faces when someone else upsets them in church. I watch. I'm a people watcher, just so you know. It's not so I've got notes on you. I just people watch because I like to people watch. It's fun. Is this all right so far? Yeah, you're all very quiet. As Christians, we are called to go further than others. Okay? To love more. To give more. To love more. Forgiveness, okay, isn't going over to the other person and saying, I forgive you. Forgiveness, and I want you to hear this properly, but if anyone hears this and then shuts off, you're going to miss actually what I'm saying, okay? Forgiveness is saying sorry for my part in this, okay? So listen. You might not have caused the initial injury, the wound, okay? You might not have. Someone else might have upset you. But the longer that you don't deal with that, okay, you play a part in helping that wound fester. Okay? Now, bitterness creeps in. Not just on the person that done the deed, but on the other person who's been hurt. And so actually, that's wrong. I don't see anywhere in my Bible where it says that's how we should behave. Okay? What we need to be is people say, I'm sorry for my part in this. You know what? I don't know. Maybe I upset you. Maybe there was something that happened and we've clashed and what you said really hurt me. But I'm sorry for my part in this as well. You know, and if there's a way that we can sort this out, then we need to sort this out, because that would be right, you know. You can then drop in that you're forgiven, because you're in conversation with someone, and that's the right way to do it. Actually, go to someone, say, is there an issue between us? What's the issue? Can we talk about this? Because at the end of the day, we need to put it right. And even if we can't be the best of friends, because that happens, okay, but we can move on together. Because it's really important that you move from the situation that you find yourself in and not be stuck there. We need to move on. Okay, I'm done with that bit, not altogether. Let me just read you one little section of scripture though. Matthew 18:69 says this, but whoever causes one of these little ones who believe in me to sin, it would be better for him to have a great millstone fastened around his neck than to be drowned in the depth of the sea. Woe to the world for temptations to sin, for it is necessary that temptations come, but woe to the one by whom the temptation comes. And if your hand or your foot causes you to sin, cut it off and throw it away. Please, no one go out to the train station. Okay? I've heard of that. Someone did that. Seriously, someone did that. Someone preached on this scripture, and then someone went out to the train line, put their arm on the train line, and the train came along and cut his arm off. So it can happen, right? It is better for you to enter life crippled or lame than to have with two hands or two feet to be thrown into the eternal fire. And if your eye causes you to sin, tear it out and throw it away. It is better for you to enter life with one eye than with two eyes to be thrown into the hell of fire. All that's saying is things need to be cut from our lives. Okay? That's what that says. Some stuff in our lives that hinders us in our walk with God needs to be cut from our lives. Okay? If it's an attitude, then you need to get a new one. Let's not be people who hinder others through our own unforgiveness. Okay? Let's be to others all that we should be. Unforgiveness hinders you and others. Unforgiveness is a parasite in the culture of this world. In fact, what the world says is, don't forgive, get even. The church needs to be the place where forgiveness is assured. Okay? We only talk about that word assured when we say we have an assurance with God. Okay? But because we have an assurance with God, then forgiveness should be assured for everyone else. Okay? Are we with me? Good. You know, we could go through all manner of different things in our lives. That was just something that just came to me while I was preparing for today. But we're not going to, because we'll be here for the next 5 weeks. What I want us to really concentrate on today is how do we have an influential life in the culture in which we live. Did you hear that? How do we have a good influential life in the culture in which we live? Daniel 1, if anyone wants to get there. Book of Daniel. Story of people taken out of their culture, taken out of the place, their society, and dumped in another one. Let's have a look a little bit. Just Daniel 1. Yeah. In the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came to Jerusalem and besieged it. And the Lord gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand, with some of the vessels of the house of God, and he brought them to the land of Shinar, to the house of his God, and placed the vessels in the treasury of his God. Then the king commanded Ashpenaz, his chief eunuch, to bring some of the people of Israel, both of the royal family and of the nobility, youths without blemish, a good appearance, and skillful in all wisdom,
endowed with knowledge, understanding, learning, and competent to stand in the king's palace, and to teach them the literature and the language of the Chaldeans. The king assigned them a daily portion of the food that the king ate, and of the wine that he drank. They were to be educated for 3 years, and at the end of that time they were to stand before the king. Among these were Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah of the tribe of Judah, and the chief of the eunuchs gave them names. Daniel he called Belteshazzar, Hananiah he called Shadrach, Mishael he called Meshach, and Azariah he called Abednego. I don't know what it says on there. I've got a black headline on mine. It says Daniel's faithfulness. But Daniel resolved that he would not defile himself with the king's food or with the wine that he drank. Therefore he asked the chief of the eunuchs to allow him not to defile himself, and God gave Daniel favour and compassion in the sight of the chief of the eunuchs. And the chief of the eunuchs said to Daniel, I fear my lord, the king, who assigned your food and your drink, for why should he see that you were in worse condition than the youths who are of your own age? So you would endanger my head with the king. Then Daniel said to the steward, whom the chief of the eunuchs had assigned over Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, test your servants for 10 days. Let us be given vegetables to eat and water to drink. Then let our appearance and the appearance of your youths who eat the king's food be observed by you, and deal with your servants according to what you see. So he listened to them in the matter and tested them for 10 days. At the end of 10 days, it was seen that they were better in appearance and fatter in flesh than all the youths who ate the king's food. So the steward took away their food and wine, and the wine they were to drink, and gave them all vegetables. As for these 4 youths, God gave them learning and skill in all literature and wisdom, and Daniel had understanding in all visions and dreams. At the end of the time, when the king had commanded that they should be brought in, the chief of the eunuchs brought them in before Nebuchadnezzar, and the king spoke with them, and among all of them, none was found like Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Therefore they stood before the king, and in every matter of wisdom and understanding about which the king inquired of them, he found them 10 times better than all the magicians and enchanters that were in all his kingdom. And Daniel was there until the first year of King Cyrus. We're not going to read chapter 3. If you can see, it's titled Nebuchadnezzar's Golden Image. And he sets up a golden image and everyone should bow. And Meshach, Shadrach and Abednego say, no, we're not bowing. So everyone grasses on them. They get taken before the king. He was a little bit upset that he's having to do this because these are good guys and he honours the work that they do in his court. And then he throws them in this really fiery furnace. But while they're watching the fiery furnace, they're like, the king says, hang on, didn't we chuck 3 of them in there? And everyone's like, yeah, we threw 3 of them in. Well, why do I see 4? And then he calls them out. And the flames haven't touched them. And they're put into high position. And the king rewards them. And they serve the king. They serve the culture in which they are, but not by dishonouring God. I still honour God. Awesome. There are instances when obeying God's commands will get you sacked or demoted. They didn't. They got promoted. At other times, obeying God will draw attention from others. They'll respect you for your kindness, for your dedication, and your humanity. See, that's a funny word, isn't it, to say in church? Humanity. See, because to some Christians, if you say, oh, you show your humanity, it will offend them. My humanity? I'm not of the flesh. And sometimes to a non-Christian, that will have another connotation that will upset them as well. Or make them go, do you mean humanity? You lot always say you're spiritual. Yet to truly show your humanity is to be like Jesus. God created us. Right? and we are to live our lives following Christ's example, because he was fully God, fully divine, yet he was fully human. He put up, was tested by the things of this world. He rejected them for God in his humanity. Not because of his divinity, but because of his humanity. He knew who he was. He knows where he comes from. He knows what he believes. In his humanity, he didn't let God down. He was faithful to God. Okay. Nebuchadnezzar changed their names, didn't he? Okay. He changed Daniel's name, meaning God is my judge, to Belteshazzar, meaning Bel's prince. Hananiah, beloved by the Lord, he changed to Shadrach, meaning illuminated by the sun god. Mishael, which means who is as God, to Meshach, who is like Venus. And Azariah, the Lord is my help, to Abednego, meaning servant of Nego. 3 years of education, eating and drinking what the king ate. This was huge. Okay, we need to understand this was huge. This was total indoctrination. It's what the king was up to. He wanted to indoctrinate the young people that they'd captured in Israel to become like them. His goal was getting these young men to leave behind their Hebrew God and their culture. Nebuchadnezzar would have probably been saying stuff like, look to me for everything that you need. Daniel and his friends refused, insisting that they would look to God. Calvin wrote this, that Nebuchadnezzar knew the Jews were a stiff-necked people, and so he used the sumptuous food to soften up the captives. This is what we need to understand. The devil uses similar tactics today. Okay? He uses similar strategy against believers today. It looks good. How can it be bad for you? It's attractive to my eye and my heart. How can it be bad for you? Wanting to indoctrinate us into the world system. He wants us to identify. This is what Nebuchadnezzar done as well. That's name us. Okay? In reference to the world. He wants to feed us what the world offers. That means miseducate it, I'm going to call. Okay? That is fill you with the wrong information about God and how this world works or should work. Daniel is faithful. He understands that his relationship with God affects every part of his life. Okay? Including, for that moment, what Daniel ate. Okay? Why? That the root of sin goes back to eating forbidden food. First, the food that's being offered to them at the king's table isn't kosher. Second, it would have been sacrificed to idols. And third, eating the king's food, and we've talked about food, Tammy spoke a little bit about food around the Easter time. And you know what? It implies fellowship, right, with the Babylonian cultural system. Sitting with the king at his table means you're fellowshipping with him. You agree with what he's doing, and I'm going to eat with you. A meal is more than a meal. Daniel and the guys didn't object to the name change because he knew, like Jesus, who he was. He didn't object to the education because he knew what he believed. He objected to the food. By Eastern standards, sharing a meal was to commit yourself to friendship. It had covenant significance. Okay? By rejecting the king's food, it could have meant, he put himself in danger, it could have meant it was seen as rejecting the king. Because many others ate the food. Many of the other people ate the food. And this is what we need to understand. Nebuchadnezzar was capable of incredible cruelty. Okay? Incredible cruelty. This is... He murdered one of the kings of Judah. Sorry. He murdered the sons of one of the kings of Judah before his very eyes. Right? Immediately after he murdered the sons, he gouged out the eyes of the king. Right? So that his lasting memory would always be the deaths of his sons. I mean, that's cruel. That's cruelty, isn't it? Alright? That's cruelty. You can find that, if you want, later, in Jeremiah 39, 6-7. Okay, that's what he did. Right? Other rulers of Judah were literally roasted to death over a fire. You find that in Jeremiah 29, 22 as well. Literally roasted. See what they were dead. Let me ask a question. How would you react to being kidnapped and separated from family and home? How would you react? What would be going on in your mind? What would be going on in your heart? Would you feel let down? I would. If I was kidnapped and put in another country, my country had been ransacked, I'm somewhere else. Maybe even thinking that God has let us down. Because surely it can't be something we've done. Maybe God has let you down. Daniel didn't. Nor did Meshach, Shadrach or Abednego. God had not fulfilled their expectations, but they were still committed to being obedient to God. I want us to hear that. God didn't fulfill their expectations. Who has expectations in their life? Come on. Who has expectations? You all have expectations? What about when them expectations are not met? Say, it's your anniversary and your husband hasn't brought home the flowers. It's always a bad thing. But listen, it's an expectation that he would have, or he would have done a gift, or he would have done something to recognise your time together. I'm trying to think of one, men, sorry, that maybe the women have let us down. Maybe they haven't cooked our favourite meal that night, when we really, in our mind, while we were out, thinking, I really fancy that meal, and we get home, and instead of beef, we've got chicken, okay, and chips. And we really wanted beef and all the trimmings. Although the women are not mind readers. Sorry, I'm picking on the men. It's always safer to pick on men. The women gang up on you afterwards. But we have expectations. And when someone doesn't meet our expectations, we feel let down by them. These guys have been taken from where they're the place they love. They've been taken from family, been taken from their homes, and they would have been, their expectations were not met. They did not think that they would be in Babylon. But they were committed to being obedient to God because they knew who they were. They knew what they believed. They knew where they were from. God gave Daniel favour. Incredible favour. You see, God doesn't abandon us. God doesn't abandon those who stand for him. Then, and he doesn't today. Sometimes it feels like we're on our own. But I always refer back to it, the poem. Footprints in the sand. It's those times when we think we're on our own. And there's one set of footprints. And it's when God is carrying us through the situation. He didn't let them down then, he doesn't today. Daniel entrusted himself to God and God came through. Although I would imagine it was a very stretching experience for Daniel at that point, and for the others being put in a fire. Would have been a very stretching experience. Listen, this is some things I want us to get. Daniel didn't go on a hunger strike because he didn't want the food. He didn't protest with placards on how wrong the king was to make him eat their food. Instead, he made a polite request. He came up with a plan, an alternative, and then he approached the right person. And he said, put us to the test. See. In the ways that these young men acted, showed faithfulness to God. And in return, favour came upon them from the highest authority in the land, the king. He was the highest authority. I mean, if we go back to looking at someone like Esther, okay, you know, and the king had chosen her to be the queen. Yeah, he got rid of Vashti because she was a bit too gobby for him. She wouldn't do as he was told. Didn't cook him the beef dinner, all right? And he got rid of her. And he installed a new queen, and he had Esther, all right? To go before the king, if you walked in to the king's chambers and he didn't raise the scepter, there was a chance you were dead. If he raised the scepter, you could go before him. And Esther took a mighty chance on going before the king that day. So this isn't just some little thing that they're not going to eat at the table. Right? They are incredibly obedient to God. The king is the highest authority in the land. Okay. This is another part about being in our culture. Being a bad, disorganized employee or employer can hinder the gospel. So often we don't think that work matters. Work does matter. Okay, work matters. I've so often that when I used to drive, I drove a chauffeur sort of car in London for about 6 months, and I picked up this lady one morning, and she see that I had a Bible in on the dash, and so we started having a conversation. I was dropping her off at work, and she was talking about the persecution that she's going through at work. And you know what? Sometimes we do, because of what we believe, go through some bad things at work where people treat us wrongly for what we believe. But we're called to just press on. All right? This woman was being a numpty. Okay? Foolish. A bad employee at work. And because she didn't get her own way, and because the boss was like, hang on, the way you're acting isn't right, she said it was persecution because she's a Christian. But when she explained to me what she's been doing, I said to her, not being funny, but if I was your boss, you'd be out of a job already. Don't worry about being told off, you'd be gone. And I'd have someone else who could do the job right and wouldn't keep moaning at me every day for no reason. So we need to understand what persecution is and what it isn't. If you don't do your job right and you're getting in trouble at work, it's not because you're a Christian. It's because you're foolish and not doing your job right. Yeah? If you're doing everything right at work and you're acting right, not just doing what you should do, but acting right, going above and beyond, right, as well, because that's what we're called to do, right? And your persecution comes, then you know what? Maybe that is persecution. But being a wally isn't, and getting yourself in trouble at work. Are you a good husband? Okay. Do you sing her love songs? Do you bring her flowers? Do you tell her she's right when you're wrong? No, when she's, even though she might be wrong. Always do that. Always, no. If she's wrong, always tell her she's right. I know I find that hard because I'm always right, but that's a trait in my family, I'm afraid. It's really funny when you get six of us, all the vicars in the same room, and Tammy stands there, she walks away, because we'll all be in a circle talking, and yet all six of us are right. And we'll all come from different viewpoints. But, just so you know, I'm the one who's always right. Because I'm always the one telling them about Jesus. Ah, so there. Are you a good wife? You know what? This is a really good thing. When you ask that question, you say, men, are you a good husband? The wives, sort of like, even if they don't fully look, they'll do that. At the husband. They will look. Men, assure me, even if you think they're not looking, they've looked at you. Women, sorry. When you ask the man, or when you ask the woman, are you a good wife? The men look upwards. Don't make me look at her. I'm not looking at her. I'm not looking at her. If I look at her, I'm going to be in trouble. I'm not looking at her. Even if I look at her and go, I did, I watched some of the men that went, I'm not looking at her wife, she is a good wife, but I can't look at her now. Are you a good son? Do you love your mother? Are you a good daughter? What about a good student? A good disciple? Someone that reads their Bible and prays? And out of that, does something else with their life. Because grace that has poured out, as I said at the beginning, needs to pour out from us. Hope that was given to us needs to pour out from us to the world around us. Are you a good employee? These four young men would have been exemplary employees. They would have been role models. Some didn't like them. But that was because they were jealous. Because of the favour that was poured out on these guys. These guys were incredible servants of God. They lived in the culture, served in the culture, but they didn't lose their identity. They knew who they were and who they served. They did what they were supposed to do and honoured God at the same time. They didn't hinder the gospel. You see, when we don't do what we're supposed to do, we hinder the gospel. We can pray, we can read, we can come to church, we can go as many meetings as we want. But if actually there's no kindness in our lives, if grace isn't being poured out from us, actually we're hindering the gospel. Grace needs to be poured out from us. Because grace was poured into us. And all over us. They didn't hinder the gospel through how they lived. They furthered the gospel. And that's our role, is to further the gospel, to make the gospel known, the good news known to all those around us. In words, but so much more in deeds. So much more in deeds. You know? There are plenty of people out there who can go out and tell people about Jesus. Right? But what we really need is more and more people who can show Jesus. Oh my goodness. You know, if we were just... How many people here today? Right? If we were to just show Jesus, each and every one of us, in where we lived, in where we worked, in schools, whatever. I promise you, we would just expand beyond belief. Because you know what? And I want to be careful here of how I say this. A lot of the people around us have heard what Christians have to say. okay?
They've heard what Christians have to say. They've seen the negative side of it, okay? What we need to be is a picture of God's love. What we need to be is people that further the gospel by what we do as well as what we say. Walk the walk, talk the talk. We need to do both, okay? We need to be people of both.
Look, listen, let me just give you an example. So, before I was doing the chauffeuring thing, the company wanted to try me out, so they got me to be a courier. Yes, I was a white van man for a little while, right? And I would go around and pick up all different things, drop it off A to B and Z and everything else. And then one day I got the radio call and it said, go to this place and pick up stuff. I'd never heard of the place. I knew the road up the West End, but I'd never heard of the place. I had no idea what I was picking up. And so I got to the place, and the guys chucked all these crates in the back of my van, signed for them, got in the van, drove, and I had to drop them off over the Docklands. When I got to the Docklands, outside on the wall, it's one of the sex channels. And basically what they chucked in the back of my courier van was all the tapes that was going to be shown that night. So they took them out of my van. And I got on the radio. And I said, can whoever decides what jobs I get, please give me a ring? And I was like, yeah, that's fine. So the guy gave me a ring. And I said, look, let me just explain something to you. I said, I love God. I said, I follow Jesus. I want to do what's right. And I cannot possibly pick up this stuff again. I know that might cost me. But actually, I can't do it. In my mind and my heart, it's not right to do. And you know what? They didn't sack me. They didn't sack me. He said, okay, mate, listen. I'll make sure you never get them again. 4 days later, on the radio thing, came up that address again. So I radioed through, I said, I think you sent it to the wrong driver. And he was like, yeah, sorry, Stu. Don't worry, mate. You don't have to do that one. We'll send you somewhere else. Do you know what? God had favour. I didn't get a bonus. I didn't get a rise. You know, I didn't get anything in that sense. What I did get 3 weeks later is promoted out of the courier van into chauffeur, because they knew they could trust me with anyone. And so that's what happened. Sometimes there'll be a cost. Sometimes there's a cost to living how we should live. But we so need to live how we need to live. We need to be people that further the gospel, not hinder. Coming to an end. Oh, I did that earlier. Down to me, that's danger. So, today, living this life as God intends us to live. As I said at the beginning, means that it has an effect on every area of our lives. Every area of our life. As a Christian, who non-Christians know, they will watch you. They will. They'll watch how you behave, they'll watch what you say. Because I had it once with my brother, me and my brother. Been a Christian about 8 months, and we got into a bit of an argument in the car, and I was wrong, and I handbraked in the middle of the road. You need to understand, I come from quite a violent background, okay? And my brother sitting next to me in the front of the car, I handbraked, he fell over, and I went, shut up. And he got out of the car and walked off. And we're both crying. Grown men, we're both now crying. He's walked off going, I can't believe my brother's hit me. I'm going, I can't believe, why did I hit my brother? I can't believe I've just done that. And it took a few days for us to get it sorted. You know? Every aspect of our life needs to be impacted through our relationship with Christ. Because that is the only way that we can live a life honouring God in this culture. It's the only way. It's the only way it can happen. Word and deed. People of word, people of deed. We're going to take communion. I didn't plan to do this bit. Maybe you need prayer today. Maybe there's some stuff in your life that you need to put right. Because you've been going along, but actually, you know it's not right. You know what you're doing isn't right. And yet you hide behind what you're doing right. Do you follow me? And so I'm just going to throw it open. And if people want prayer this morning, you know what? Listen, there is no shame in coming forward for prayer. You know what? When you step out, God honours. God brings healing. God starts to use what he's doing through you to further the gospel with someone else. So we're just going to throw it open. Maybe there's some stuff that you just need to get right with God today. And I'm just going to throw this open. If you want prayer this morning, we're going to open it up for 10 seconds. And then after that, we're just going to pray and we're going to go for communion. So it's down to you, whether you need to move this morning from your seat.